It's
called Punch Drunk.
The punches weren't really necessary. Maybe
they were super necessary.
Welcome to episode 90 of the Punch Drunk Podcast, your favorite combat sports podcast hosted by two dudes who can't fight and know way less about fighting than they think they do. I'm your host, Lewis, and I'm joined, as always, by Adam, the traveling man. What's going on, brother? Tell the world where you are right now.
Yes, I am in Singapore right now for UFC Singapore this weekend. Mate, it's been beautiful, you know, it's a relatively short flight, at least compared to Vegas, if you're coming from Australia. Only one, you know, no connecting flights either. Direct travel, stay in a nice hotel, weather's nice. Can't complain. And I'm here to watch some fights. So, you know,
yeah,
life's going all right.
Get my tiny little violin out for you again. It just must be awful. No, go on.
Sorry. No, you're right.
So I was going to say, the only thing we're going to complain about is the frigging internet quality. So we apologize for people watching on YouTube and also listening. If there are any delays, it's because... What is it with hotels? Why do hotels have the worst Wi-Fi? They'll do everything to like make your stay like nice, but they can't figure out like just a good Wi-Fi system. Or it'll be like you get to a hotel, but oh, included free in your stay is 50 megabytes of data, and then it's $1,000 for every gigabyte afterwards. Like, why do hotels still use internet systems from like 2003? What's going on?
It's so annoying. And I'm even on like their corporate Wi-Fi, which is meant to be faster. And there's like UFC obviously have a heap of offices and stuff set up for the week downstairs in like the function centers, and the internet there is fine. So it's like, why can it be fine there but not fine in all the fucking hotel rooms?
Yeah, doesn't make any sense, but nonetheless we will press on despite these terrible conditions, and we'll talk a little bit about the fights that we've got coming up in Singapore.
First world problems.
The five-star hotel you're staying in Singapore, the Wi-Fi is not quite up to scratch, so make sure you complain about that and ask for a refund, yeah?
I'll ask for a refund on the $0 I've spent.
So, UFC Singapore, we'll look ahead to that shortly, but man, we have to go back and look at UFC 292. It was indeed the Sugar Show. Sean O'Malley is the new bantamweight champion of the world. And holy shit, dude, he made it look easy. The first guy in a long, long time to put a beat down on Aljamain Sterling like that. Completely dominated the game plan from start to finish. And Aljo was 0-2 on his takedowns and just couldn't do anything. How impressed were you with that performance? And how exciting is it for someone who, is measured by their social media performance to have Sean O'Malley as someone who is just a bona fide superstar? Another one in the ranks of UFC champion.
Yeah, well, if I'm honest, I didn't really think about how good that benefit is for me until you mentioned it when we were chatting after the main event. And that's a very, very good call. It would be even better if he was Australian or a Kiwi, but hey, I can't get too greedy. But yeah, man, Sugar does good numbers on the socials worldwide anyway. Like he does numbers as good as anyone for us anyway on the Australian channel. So, yeah, you're right about that for me personally, but I think the UFC and Dana and whatnot cheering even more. So they should be. It's not like, you know, it was fixed. This guy beat Aljo, knocked him out. So
yeah, I mean, there were some question marks. Yeah, there were some question marks about whether he actually deserved a title shot. There was, you know, some people arguing that he lost the razor close decision to Petr Yan. Others pointing out that he hadn't finished anyone who was left remaining in the UFC. All of those people have been cut. It's always easy, I think, to go back and pick apart someone's resume years and months after the fact. The reality is the guys that he fought were decent dudes at the time he fought them. And also, when you're a big star, you get the push. And he was put in the opportunity. He could have wilted. He could have succumbed to what many people were forecasting would be Aljo's relentless pressure and takedown ability. But instead, he used masterful, and I mean truly high-level striking and footwork and range control to completely nullify anything that Aljo wanted to do. Made even more impressive by the fact that he hadn't been able to wrestle and grapple for 5 weeks because of a rib injury. He got Aljo frustrated. Aljo charged at him. We all saw what happened. A beautiful pullback counter flattened Aljo, used his own momentum against him, and it was all over Red Rover. Just an unbelievable finish. Just shows the timing and the power that Sean O'Malley holds. Doesn't look like he's a supreme athlete. He looks like a complete and utter head case with his hair, his face tattoos, his clown car Lamborghini. It's skinny, scrawny guy, although he is starting to put on a little bit of muscle. But he doesn't look like one of the most dangerous men on the planet. And the reality is, that's what Sean O'Malley is. You have to give him that credit. He is a superstar, and it's only going, you know, it's going from strength to strength for him and the UFC, because they are very much invested in the Sugar Sean business.
Yeah, it's actually hilarious the way you just put that. One of the most dangerous men on the planet. But yeah, there's no other way to put it, I guess. But man, I didn't think it was an early stoppage at all. I thought
no,
he was gonna get rid of him.
I always find it funny when like fans of a fighter will complain about an early stoppage, which I don't think was early. It's like, okay, you're a big fan of this guy. You're like a big Aljo nut hugger. So what, you prefer to him to have just been knocked out completely unconscious and like suffer potentially career altering brain injury? You're that big of a fan of the guy. That's what you want for him. Like, what are we talking about? He got absolutely dropped, face planted, and then his head was bounced off the canvas like three times by clean ground and pound strikes and a few other grazing shots. And then he turtled up. His hands were by his side, and he went face down on the canvas. Like, absolutely clean stoppage. We'll see these guys again, I think. I don't think it'll be an immediate rematch, but Aljo's proven he can handle everyone in the division. It was possibly an off night for him. He possibly let the occasion get to him, the frustration, the dislike that he has for Sugar Sean potentially. And I think when he looks back, he'll be extremely disappointed in his game plan and how he wasn't able to execute it. Did he bring in the right sparring partners? Did they prepare accordingly? He also said he sort of took Sean O'Malley lightly, you know, maybe underestimated him. Maybe he didn't prepare as hard as he ought to have. Maybe he wasn't prepared for that sort of high-level technical striking. He probably thought that he could just grab a hold of him like he has everyone else and use his elite-level MMA wrestling to get himself a decision. So, yeah, man, huge shakeup in the division. And now, you go, well, there's tons of opportunities. But before, you know, so what do you want to see Sean O'Malley do next? Who do you want to see him fight? I think there's two fights ready made, right? There's the revenge narrative and with Merab Dvashvili out of Sarah Longo MMA's gym there, teammate of Aljamain Sterling and sort of great friend of his. Or you have the rematch with the only guy to beat Sugar Sean O'Malley, Chito Vera, who also fought and won on the card against Pedro Munhoz and made the most of his opportunity. So which one do you want to see?
Chito, definitely. Just purely because I love Chito. I'm not taking into account any logic here, any form,
yep,
any who deserves a shot. I just want to see Chito versus Sugar for sure. And as if that's not going to sell.
Mate, without question, I actually tweeted about this yesterday. Like, on a sporting merit basis and from a stylistic matchup, the fight to make is Merab. Because you go, well, he's probably an even better wrestler than Aljo, even more relentless with his takedown attempts and the way he uses them to create pressure. We saw what he did to Piotr Jan was just unbelievable. Would Sean O'Malley's takedown defense and footwork be able to nullify that level of pressure? Would he be able to hurt Merab and put him away in the same way? That's a great question. Styles make fights, and I'd love to see that fight one day and make it happen. But then you've got narrative. Then you've got Chito Vera, who beat Sean O'Malley. Okay, everyone's like, oh, it's an injury. No. It was a strike that Chito Vera landed, which immobilized Sugar Sean O'Malley, and he beat him. And that's a very, very powerful position to be in, especially when you fought on the same card. People know who you are. The narrative is there. He's a bit of a personality as well. So the marketability and the story is all there with Chito Vera. Now, what you don't really have is the sporting merit. Okay, yeah, he got a win against Pedro Munhoz. I don't think in any world that sort of puts you into a number one contender position. And his last fight, he was completely dog-walked by Corey Sandhagen, who himself probably has a stronger claim, but he's on ice with torn triceps in the fight against Rob Font at UFC Nashville. And also Merab is potentially injured and not ready to fight in December. And so if you're Sugar Sean O'Malley, you go, yeah, get me that title defense, get me on a card. Maybe it's going to be co-main with Conor McGregor. Can you imagine how much that fight would sell? Conor McGregor and Sean O'Malley on the same card. Dana White's erection, it will be heard around the globe. It will be outrageous how much money they would make from that fight. What an absolute monstrous event that would be. Conor McGregor, the old, Sugar Sean, the new, getting together, main, co-main. Ah, oh, it's just... Ah, it's so spine. Yeah, exactly. Well, Connor Light was also on this card, Mr. Parrot in every one of his catchphrases. Ian Gary. Oh my god. But yeah, man, it would be awesome.
Gary. Everyone hates him. No, I don't mind.
I like him. I like him. He's a problem. Like, come up with your own stuff, man. Don't literally parrot Connor's catchphrases. And I'm sure he's doing it to annoy people. And then he gets articles written about him and it builds his profile and so on and so forth. But yeah, he also like took it upon himself to be like the arbiter of parenting and was like, I'm beating up Neil Magny because he's a piece of shit. And like no one ever has had a bad word to say about Neil Magny. And then he mentions something about smacking his kids. And Ian Gary's like, no, I'm a stepfather to a child. And I took his name, so I know everything there is to know about parenting. It's like, come on, Ian. All right, you beat him. Well done. But, like, let's not get too carried away with this. You beat a guy that you were supposed to beat, albeit very, very well. I digress. Let's circle back to the main event here. So you want to see Chito. I want to see
Lewis
Chito.
Turned out all right.
You want to see Chito. I want to see Chito. But tell me, what do you want to see Aljo do next? Do you think he should go to 145?
Well, he did. Yeah, but he said it himself that he's not going to be able to beat Volk, which I just found hilarious, man, that they just go outright. Like, what champ at the moment doesn't think they could beat the champ in the division above them? Everyone seems to think they could go up and win. And he just, like, loses to Sugar and he's like, I could not beat Volk. Get no shit.
Mate, it's one of the craziest things because this is not the first former bantamweight champion to do this. Henry Cejudo was hoping to come back and go up to 145 and challenge Volk and become the first three-weight champion in UFC history. Henry Cejudo, one of the most decorated, arguably one of the most decorated, greatest combat sport athletes of all time. You have Aljamain Sterling, who everyone was writing as the greatest bantamweight champion in the lead-up to this fight. Something which I disputed, I might say. Pat myself on the back for that one. That take aged well. And both of them have said, in post-fight interviews, after their losses, basically admitting that Volkanovski would dog-walk them. How insanely good is Volkanovski for him to be so deep inside this dude's head And as you said, we're in an era of everyone wanting to go up and challenge and do double champ and two weight division champions and all, so on and so forth. That basically after one or two title defenses, everyone's like, I've got to go up. I've got to prove myself two weight champion. I can do this. This is, and these guys aren't short on confidence. I know Aljo just got knocked out, but still, he knows he's one of the best 135ers on the planet who struggles and kills himself to make the weight. And he just openly went, no, yeah, Volkanovski would do bad things to me. Henry Cejudo said the same thing. Now, Cejudo's a little bit more forgivable because he's not a, you'd say maybe he's not a true bantamweight. Maybe he's a 125er. But nonetheless, for an Olympic level wrestler and two weight UFC champion to just be like, no, I don't want any part of that. What is Volkanovski made of? And if you're in the Volkanovski clothes stealing business and sweat licking business like you are, you must have been absolutely on cloud nine to hear that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I am, but I'm also not, because I'm also in the business of Volk being in a big fight so I can fucking go to him. So but man, it's crazy, and what it does is it made me think. I know in the AFL they have this award called the Players MVP or something like that, and the players actually vote for who they think is the best player in the league. And nearly every single year, it's like, you know, they're unanimous. Who everyone, like the fans all agree, the players all agree, but they don't always win the actual MVP, which is called the Brownlow, and voted by umpires. So I was like, it made me think that, like, if they had an equivalent of that in the UFC, Volk would probably have won like the last 3 years in a row, I reckon. Just the fighters MVP, the fighters champion.
Oh,
for sure, they'd just be like, yeah,
unanimous. Everyone would be like, yeah, it's Volk, without question. By the way, I know you're very much in the Volkanovski business now. Does he know like the added pressure he has on your career because your like success and happiness as a human being is tied directly to what he does inside the octagon? Does he know that he's carrying another person along with him? He's not just fighting for his family, he's fighting for Adam as well.
I think he knows, but I don't think he gives two fucks.
Yeah, that checks out.
He probably is more likely to get me fired than make me happy if he chooses to.
Yeah, I mean, that's a given. I mean, how many strikes is he going to give you when he catches you rifling through his gym bag again?
Oh, fuck off. That was one time.
So I don't think we see Aljo till next year. He's been very vocal about like not wanting to fight so regularly. He's going to take time off, but I think he's already now starting to chirp about a potential rematch with Sugar Sean. I don't think he'll get that immediate rematch, but I could certainly see him, maybe him going away, getting one win and coming back, or even just sitting on the sideline. Sugar Sean defends and then him getting another opportunity. The loser in this, though, if Aljo does do that, is his old mate Merab, who is going to end up looking like the biggest fool in the world for basically refusing to fight Aljo and sitting, taking a backseat for Aljo to further his career under this promise that he was going to go up to 145, defend the belt. And all of a sudden, Merab could be the odd man looking in. He's the clear number one contender. But because of circumstances and narrative and Chito Vera taking a short notice opponent in Pedro Munhoz and risking his ranking and fighting on the card of Sugar Sean O'Malley, he's positioned himself. And of course, if we're talking about him, Aljo being one of the greatest bantamweights, if not the greatest leading up to this, set the division record for bantamweight title defenses, you of course then have to consider him for a rematch as well, because that's what happens when a dominant champion loses. Now, albeit it wasn't a very close fight, but nonetheless, like, That's typically what happens. You see it time and time again. A champion gets dethroned, a dominant champion, they lose, and then they come back. I mean, you know, Anderson Silva, Chris Weidman is a perfect example and has a nice tie into this card. We'll talk about Chris Weidman shortly. Now, Aljo's not been as dominant as Anderson Silva, but certainly people are talking about him as one of the best ever in his weight class. So he I think he cocked up. I think he really, really screwed up and was probably a bit down on himself and not thinking clearly by not being like, let's run this back. I want to do it again. I also think he doesn't have a great relationship with the UFC matchmakers, and so they probably would have knocked it away at that time. But the but he's now starting to say to Sean, yeah, I'll see you again. I'll be back, and chirping up on social media. So, yeah, I do think that could happen. He could go away, maybe get another win over someone, and Merab has to sit on the sidelines yet again. Maybe Merab's the one who goes up to 145 because he's a big dude. But I think at this point, Merab has to just go, you know what? I'm taking control of my career and I'm doing whatever the UFC wants me to do, whether it's to fight for the title, whether it's to fight Aljamain Sterling, or whether it's to go up to 145. Because before he knows it, his career is going to be said and done and he'll have wasted 2 or 3 years of his prime accommodating someone else who ultimately is going to be doing the best thing for his career as well. And it's easy for Aljo to say, oh, no, when he's the champion, when he's getting the big checks, when he's getting all the endorsements, it's easy for him to say, no, no, just wait, Merab, you'll get your turn. And then all of a sudden, those trimmings are taken away from Aljamain Sterling. And he's like, oh, actually, I think I want to get those back. Sorry, Merab, you're just going to have to wait a little bit longer. So this is a really, really interesting narrative. And Merab has got to be like the lowest IQ individual in the world if he continues to go along with it.
I reckon Merab like was behind the scenes praying that Aljo lost. She's like, I want to fucking fight for the title. I'm not going to fight you, so move on.
Maybe. I mean, it's crazy though, because he could just get pushed out of a... He doesn't make the most exciting fights either because of his style. He's not a finisher. It's a, yeah, man, super, super interesting situation at the top of the division right now. It was super impressive. It blew my mind away. But tell you what was even more impressive, potentially, the absolute dominance that we saw from Zhang Weili. Just a one-sided beatdown of Amanda Lemos. And we called it. We said there was no chance that Lemos was going to win that fight. And then for a moment when she had that choke on, I was like, uh-oh, maybe I shouldn't have been too blasé. But that was one tiny flickering moment in an otherwise otherworldly, monstrous, impressive one-sided beatdown by Zhang Weili that she put on Amanda. And just so, so impressive. And now it's, what does the UFC want to do with it? Hopefully it's Shanghai. And hopefully it's against Yan Xiaonan. Now, maybe they don't want to pit two Chinese fighters against each other. Maybe they want to unify China to get them behind one person, in which case it's probably going to be Tatiana Suarez who gets the opportunity. But either way, man, Zhang in China, it's just, she's going to go to a whole new level of superstardom over there. She is a beast. And such a likable person as well. She's so nice. Her English is getting better, but she's just going to absolutely dominate in China.
100%. And there's one thing you can't say about, you know, people knock women's MMA and it kind of lacks depth, which, you know, elements of that are true. But one thing you can't knock, at least like the top five or six in these divisions, is just how fucking tough they are. Like, Lemos got beat the fuck up, and like she was still having a crack at the end of that fight. I couldn't believe it, honestly. I was like it's kind of hard to watch now.
Yeah, that sort of determination and that like drowning that she experienced, she will improve from that, but I'll also give her a lot of credit with the UFC that she didn't fold and wilt. She got the title shot. Did she deserve it? We talked about it on the preview show. Questionable. She's ranked number six. Okay, here's your opportunity. Yeah, okay, Zhang Weili proved she's classes above you, but she didn't out-heart you. She didn't out-tough you. And that's when she fights the next person, whoever it is, you can guarantee they're not going to be on the level of Weili, because no one is. And Amanda Lemos is going to be a much, much better fighter because of it.
Yeah, 100%. I feel like a broken record. Zhang Weili is just the best in women's MMA, and it's not even close.
Yeah. I mean, that's it, man. Not even close. Ian Garry, we briefly talked about him. He, yeah, great performance. Just beat the brakes off Neil Magny. And people are saying it was impressive. You know, Neil Magny turned up on 1 week notice and survived against Gary Just. Got to say, though, very impressive from Ian Gary. A completely different style of opponent from Jeff Neal that he was expected to face. You know, Magny wanted to come in with a grapple-heavy approach, and he just couldn't. Gary's striking was too damaging, too prolific. He beat those legs up and basically took Magny's weapons away from him. Super impressive performance. Not impressed with Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, though. Gary called for that fight, and I know they're kind of friends and they have a relationship via karate combat as well. But Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, okay, his opponent misses weight and he neglects to fight. He's turned down Shavkat. And he's basically either beaten, lost, or turned down everyone in the top 15 except Ian Gary. And you're like, okay, what are we going to do at this point, Wonderboy? You can't just decide that I just want to fight Kamaru Usman. He's a wrestler I'll face because you want to shortcut your way to a title shot. And the only reason he wants Kamaru Usman because he still has this reputation of a great wrestler. But let's be honest, his knees are shot now. And with every passing month, his explosiveness and takedown ability gets worse and worse and worse. And that's a calculated risk for Wonderboy. And I understand he's trying to manage and navigate his career. But you also, you know, are not going to win any favors by flatly just turning down fights left, right, and center, which he seems to be doing at the moment. Ian Gary versus Jeff Neal. Let's rebook that fight. Let's make it happen. And then we do Ian Gary versus whoever. You know, he's calling out Khamzat. Khamzat's already going up to 185. I don't think we're going to see that anytime soon. But Ian Gary, man, he's serious business. He is absolutely serious business.
Yeah, everyone's saying, oh, he should have got the finish. It's like, as much as Ian Gary was saying Neil Magny's a piece of shit and all that, Neil Magny's also fucking one of the toughest guys there. So he probably would have put away, you know, 85% of that division, 90% of that division with the same sort of a fight, but Magny's just tough as fuck. And I thought it was super impressive because, yeah, he might not have finished him, but from literally the first 5 seconds onwards, you knew he was going to win that fight.
Yeah, he got 15 minutes in there with a veteran. And yeah, Neil Magny only gets finished by the elite of the division. He only loses to the very, very good of the division. We've talked about this before. A win over Neil Magny means you're a bona fide top 10 welterweight on the planet. If you can't beat Magny, you're not getting there. And if you finish Magny, you belong in like the top five. Like, he's a great measuring stick. Poor Neil Magny, that's all he's been reduced to now. Which is a shame because he's a very good fighter in his own right. But at this point, he's just a measuring stick. He's a barometer for other fighters and what their projected success will be in the upper echelons of the division. So, yeah, very, very impressive. Let's see Jeff Neal. That's going to be a fun fight. I think we see Shavkat Rakhmonov versus Bilal Muhammad. And Leon's going to fight Colby. And then the winner of that will fight the winner of Shavkat versus Bilal. And Shavkat is going to murder Bilal. So Shavkat versus Leon for the title. Let's go.
Keen. What a fight.
Tell you, speaking of toughness, we talked about Amanda Lemos's toughness and we talked about Neil Magny's toughness. Is there anyone tougher than Chris Weidman? Oh my goodness. That was hard to watch, to see him get absolutely beaten down by leg kicks and still throw and still stay in the fight, despite everything that he's gone through, despite the pain, the suffering, the rehabilitation, the anguish, the uncertainty. It would have been very, very easy for Chris Weidman to take the easy way out and one of those leg kicks just go, you know what? That's done. I don't want to compromise myself anymore. And a lot of people have called for him to retire. Dana's called for him to retire. Weidman said he's not retiring. Shit, man. When you come back against a guy like Brad Tavares and pretty much it was a one-sided beatdown, it probably tells you that you're not ready to, you shouldn't still be fighting if you consider yourself, an elite guy, because Brad Tavares is good, but he's not elite. He's just good everywhere. He's a good, tough fighter with a veteran, 20 plus fights in the UFC. Just a good, good fighter. Nice dude. I remember him from The Ultimate Fighter. He was talented back then, and his potential is just grown and grown. And I would say his UFC career has far exceeded what I thought it would when I saw him in The Ultimate Fighter. And that's a testament to his ability, to his hard work and his determination. Poor Weidman, man. It was tough to see. Rumors are he may have even done his PCL, LCL, and ACL in his other knee now. Not confirmed yet, but like, come on, dude. Like, 41 years old. Time to stop now.
Hang up the gloves, mate. Sorry.
Yeah. But the maybe the greatest part of that fight was Conor McGregor's voice note, which you sent to me. And it was Conor McGregor narrating that fight whilst intoxicatingly singing, "Noir, warm back down," which was Weidman's walkout song. And he was just like,
I listened to that about 25 times that
back day. Down. Won't then, back down.
Man, someone needs to like perfectly line that audio up with the moment, like with the fight, and just put that clip out on the internet, please, because it's honestly the funniest
Adam, thing that's ever. That sounds like a job for you to do maybe on the flight back home from Singapore for our socials.
No.
Come on, bro. You're going to be sat on the plane doing nothing.
Ah, Mile High Club.
I was going to say something there, but I'm not going to because I'm just going to have to edit it out afterwards.
Pussy.
All right,
man.
We're on a very tight schedule. It was great to see RoboCop come back in the win column. He's one of my favorite fighters. Used a jiu-jitsu and elbowed Chulin's face through the canvas. That was sick. And then the fight of the night, unbelievable, between Brad Katona and Cody Gibson for the Ultimate Fighter Bantamweight Championship or title or whatever you want to call it. Both guys end up getting contracts. Both guys get 50K. They set the record. Think about how many great bantamweight fights there have been. They set the division record for significant strikes in a bantamweight fight. It was fucking unbelievable. In a three-round fight, such a great... Oh, it was so good. It was so good to see both guys get those contracts. And both are going to be fun to follow in this ridiculous 135-pound division. But before we get out of here, we'll wrap up in a couple of minutes because... I've got work to do. You've got work to do. Singapore, man. Where you got main event, Max Holloway versus Korean Zombie. That's a great fight. I think Max is a lopsided favorite for a reason here. But Korean Zombie's game is tough as nails, man. And if someone's going to pull something out of the bag, you never know. You never know with Zombie. But I think everyone's picking Max Holloway in this fight. But I'm just going to pull up the card now because I haven't got it in front of me. And I want to see... quickly highlight some of the other good fights. We've got one Aussie on this card. We've got the man out of Logan, Junior Taffer, still fighting at heavyweight against Parker Porter. And I know you've had an opportunity to speak with Junior this week. How's he feeling? And what did he learn from his UFC debut loss against Muhammad Usman?
I don't know what he learned, but he is keen to knock out Parker Porter and just make it a double KO because his brother knocked him out.
Parker Porter terrorized by the Taffer family.
He officially quit his like day job as well last week, Junior. So his spirits, you know, he's officially a full time fighter.
That's really cool. Is it? Is there a new contract or he just got himself, you know, he was just sorting himself out and getting his ducks in a row and now's the right time? It just worked out that way.
I think both, bit of both.
All right. Beautiful, beautiful. There's some other fun fights on this card, man. Some really fun fights. Chidi and Njokuani versus Michael Olajeshuk is almost certain going to be a banger at 185 pounds. We've got Erin Blanchfield against Tyler Santos, which Tyler Santos, her last time out, she lost a very close decision to Valentina Shevchenko. And Erin Blanchfield is, you know, getting ready for a title shot. And so this has huge implications in the flyweight division. So that's going to be interesting. Giga Chikadze is finally returning against Alex Caceres. So we should see some interesting, fun striking in that particular matchup. And then in the co-main event, bit of a weird one, to be honest. Anthony Smith is fighting Ryan Spann. They fought, it's a little while ago now. It was back in September 21, so nearly 2 years ago. But that was only three fights ago for Anthony Smith and four fights ago for for Ryan Spann, and Spann got submitted in the first round. I'm not quite sure why this fight has been made, but yeah, okay. I'll watch it. I'll certainly watch it. But yeah, man, this is a fun card. It's a fun card. It's a good fight night. I reckon we're going to see quite a few finishes. It's at a nice time zone here in Europe. You're going to be obviously live there in time zone. It's a morning fight card in the US. I think it's a good time zone for pretty much everyone, actually. So more events in Singapore, please and thank you. But yeah, we'll do a recap of this event. And then, of course, we'll look forward to UFC Paris. And then beyond that, we've got UFC 293 as well, which I hope we're going to see a few more fights added to the card, because unfortunately Kaikara France had to pull out with a concussion suffered, and Manel Kapp is going to fight Felipe Dos Santos, who will be making his UFC debut. So I think a few more fights are yet to be added to that card, potentially in Sydney, because right now I think there's only 10 fights on the card. Should probably a few more going to be added to that, but we'll obviously preview everything 293 in the week before that card. So make sure you're subscribed. Adam, it's been great. Tell the people where they can find us. Oh, nice. That'd be good. My sources have confirmed it. I'll tweet that out.
Find us at PunchDrunkPod on Instagram, PunchDrunkPod_ on Twitter, PunchDrunkPod on TikTok, PunchDrunkPodcast on YouTube, PunchDrunkPod@gmail.com, LewisGloverMMA on Twitter, LewisGloverMMA on Instagram, and like, subscribe, follow on YouTube, Apple, Spotify. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Lewis. And go fighting.
Peace.